This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
All right, so we're back, and last week we ended on rentals. Have they done their job? And your new talk that you're going to be doing at the clubs is called 10 Decisions Real Estate Investors Need to Make in the Next 12 Months. That sounds pretty ominous. But you know, to be fair, the talks that you've been doing for the last 2 years have been urging investors to upgrade, cash in, change sheets, think about what you own. Do you feel like you've gotten more conservative as you've gotten older, or just have you always been?
Well, you know, I've always been willing to let go of what I had to get what I thought either was to safe ground or better inventory. That I've always contemplated that. Mm-hmm. Now, there's different models for that investors have followed. Rick Solis has sold everything he owns in real estate right now. Mm-hmm. So it did it. It did its job.
Yeah.
He bought it. He worked his butt off with Adrian.
Yeah.
They did a great job. But he got tired of managing. Why? Because they were marginal rentals in a tough area. And when the assignment was complete, where the properties had doubled or tripled, he cashed out. Okay. Mike Hantu has spent 40 years getting to the inventory he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, not everybody has done that journey. A lot of people that we have, let's say, just got introduced to the business within 10 years ago.
Yeah. This is my first full cycle.
Okay. So you had an opportunity to buy this discounted real estate, and it's matured in price.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've met with several people that have amassed 50 rental properties in 14 different cities. The ages range from 80 years to 30 years.
Yeah.
Okay. And they all have gone up tremendously in value. So really one of the considerations, I mean, that's unbelievable. So what's next? So here's the choice. Let's keep all of this stuff when we know a market is probably going to be flat for the next 8 years, and I'm going to have a rental portfolio that wins no tiebreakers whatsoever because it's not new. It's going to go through all the, as you've had properties that are older, you're going to get the new roof request and the AC is going to break. And you also, I mean, here's an honest statement. The rental properties I had in Moreno Valley were not in a great area where I would say 25% of the people would even say, I will live there. So I had eliminated 75% of the world just by driving down the street.
Yeah.
Going, nah, I don't want to stay there. Well, when you have a downturn, all of that is exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
And see that. So one of the things about the title is talking about a time frame. Well, I think we have a comfortable year ahead to make decisions without paying a big penalty on borrowed time. Okay. So,
you're talking about the timing report right now.
That's
okay.
I'm talking about that. Well, that's why the title, you know, but I'm saying you've got this rental portfolio in the next year, you have a choice. Maybe if you're going to stay completely in California, that's great. Just maybe get rid of some of that stuff that's going to drive you nuts or already is.
Right.
That was one of the things I asked is, I want you to write on the left-hand side when I met with a couple people, you know, how do you feel about it? And so there was 25% of their portfolio they loved.
Mm-hmm.
On 25%, and I hate the rest of it.
Right.
You know, but it did its job. It went up. I mean, 29 Palms went up. Lancaster went up. I mean, but to manage that in a downturn is a whole different story. And so you just have to start thinking, okay, how do I get either all my rentals to be on the I Like It page,
mm-hmm.
or maybe look at a new location? Because, you know, one thing, when I decided to keep some rentals, I mean, I talked with Mike Cantu.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the perfect rental. What is it? What does it have? Okay. Well, you know, where we decided to go, we just built it.
Yeah. No, I get it. Well, especially after the election, I guess there was a few things that I was surprised. So Proposition 10, I was really glad that it didn't pass. Just from my experience in New York City, living in the areas where rent control, I mean, the last place I lived, I've talked about it before, I was on the fifth floor of a walk-up. We used to keep a plastic bowl in the shower because we may or may not have had any water pressure on any given day. So there would be drips that we would collect in the bowl. And I was more than happy to do it because I was living the artist's dream in New York City. But there were families that you would run into who would brag because they were paying so little in rent. you know, oh, my family's lived here for, you know, 70 years. And I mean, it's just a running joke. Do you, you know, have working water and electricity? Are you still on gas lamps? Because when you're paying $300 a month in New York City, guaranteed the landlord hasn't made enough money to really justify a lot of infrastructure yeah. improvements. So I don't think California can continue with the rental increases like they have. We have a homeless problem. We're not building enough inventory, but it's unfortunate that the politicians have decided to put that, try to put that on the back of, you know, real estate investors and landlords, because it's politically expedient to do so when they don't actually solve the problem.
That's right. And see, that's a scary statement, politically expedient. So California ownership, let's say, is lower than the US average. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so legislation, I'm really surprised that got defeated so soundly, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was the 59.6% said no.
Yeah, but that's still uncomfortable that 40% said okay.
Yeah.
You know, so that doesn't mean that'll always be that margin. And you also have other considerations in California. You know, Prop 13, that's going to be up for grabs for commercial real estate coming up mm-hmm. to where apartment building. I mean, you know, when we speak in front of the Apartment Owners Association, I'm not an apartment expert, but you know what? Your cap rates, well, asking the audience, would you buy your own building? There's low rolling laughter every time. You're going,
okay.
Yeah. Why are you keeping all this stuff? I mean, maybe it's just, and I understand the perfect time. Maybe they have the apartment building they want, just like Mike Cantu has a pile of rentals that he wants, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter if it goes up or down. That's perfect.
Right.
But if you bought that apartment building 6 years ago with the assignment for it to go up, it has.
Right.
And so, you know, just to camp out there for it to go back down and then get legislation perhaps passed on a Prop 13 change, let's say, or whatever, that could be damaging.
Well, we now in California have a Democratic supermajority, so there could be some things that get pushed through pretty easy.
That's one of the things that we really do want to do for our audience is interview what that means.
Okay.
What's an interview? Okay, you have a supermajority. What cannot be stopped now legislatively? I would really like to know that.
Let's get Carr on, okay. Maybe, because that would be good to understand.
Yeah, because that is a little concerning.
Well, in LA County too, I just called today. So December 20th is the deadline for raising rents more than 3%, because in unincorporated areas of LA County, there's a temporary moratorium where you can't raise rents more than 3% a year.
And where did they get the right to do that?
I don't know. I'm confused with that because it came Costa out, Hawkins, yeah.
It came right after basically the end of the legislation. They tried Prop 10 getting defeated. I mean, within a week, that came out.
Well, they've been talking about this. The articles I saw were in September, so it did happen before. Maybe in thinking that this wasn't going to pass, they were going to do it anyway.
Okay.
So I'm not sure, but I did call today. The County of Los Angeles and says, is this in effect? And they said, yes. December 20th, it goes into place.
Does every city have the opportunity to do that or not?
I didn't think they did. I thought that was the whole point behind Costa Hawkins. And I'm going to have to do a little bit more research on that. Point being, though, that California is becoming a less friendly yes. landlord state.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, as you're talking about the 10 decisions you're going to need to make, you really have to look at a lot of different factors. I mean, I have rentals that I can't imagine getting rid of because I bought them at so next to nothing that I've got a rental in my Roth. I mean,
but you know, because you bought it at the bottom of the market, your tax bill is much lower than your neighbor's.
Correct. But if Prop 13 takes, yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. If Prop 13 changed for residential stuff, you would not want to be here.
Okay.
That would be that'd be a tough day because you'd have a lot of people not be able to stay in their home. That's what's not fair about it. You'd have somebody that's 80 years old that's living in, well, Glenn's mom, mm-hmm. you know, lived in a $2.5 million house or $2 million house. And she had lived there for a long time. She had bought it for $200,000. Her tax bill was a tenth of her neighbor's.
Right.
But that was what you said was going to be true. And I know that's a difficult thing, but she and many other her other neighbors who were living on Social Security and some pension were not going to stay there with a $25,000 or $30,000 property tax bill.
Right. They couldn't do it.
But it is a heck of a subsidy when you start thinking about that too, you know.
Well, and you know, the other Proposition 5 where you could transfer your taxes, I was actually surprised that did not pass to the same tune. 59.7% of people yeah. said no to that.
I didn't understand why that was
because there are already some counties you can do that, number one. Mm-hmm. And the people who were for it were like, yeah, they could actually downsize to, you know, the family member you were just talking about. She was in a house that there's no way if the taxes went up, she could afford, but she could have downsized to something a lot more affordable and freed up that property.
That's right.
But the goal I saw was keeping people in the state, where right now I have a lot of friends that the Trump tax changes didn't benefit the wealthy. I think I'm afraid the wrong people are going to be leaving the state because it's just less, a lot of things are less friendly.
The attitude in California definitely is concerning. I mean, if you make a lot of money and you don't write off your state taxes anymore, that's an additional, not only do you have state tax, but you have it now not deductible against federal. Mm-hmm. So if you add both of those numbers up, there's a significant penalty for staying here. Mm-hmm. And so you'll definitely have some migration of people going, that's just not worth it. 50, 60 grand a year. I can buy at about a 5% interest rate. I can buy a $1 million house in Florida, which is got to be one heck of a place.
Seriously. Or do like that one investor we saw at the Sacramento airport, sell everything and go on a worldwide cruise because it's cheaper to live on a cruise ship than it is in California. That was an amazing statement.
Well, free medical. Doctors there.
Yeah, that's true. And a floating morgue, unfortunately, having worked on a cruise ship. I know that to be true.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, so if you go onto our calendar on thenorrisgroup.com, the 10 decisions real estate investors need to make in the next 12 months, we'll be doing that all next year at all the different clubs. And we'll launch that at the San Diego Creative Investors Association. Actually, this session will air after that, but we'll be back at it in January. So let's get to the timing report. So, you know, the last report we did in 2017, 2% interest, $40 trillion in debt, and other surprise endings. You really thought that was possibly going to be your last report you ever did.
I did. I thought, you know, one thing in the very beginning of that report, characteristics of a market timer is that when you're wrong, you say you're wrong. And you should be able to defend any decision. Mm-hmm. And so the 2% interest rates, that was very carefully calculated looking at past recessions and thinking we were going to have one by the end of 2018. And that in the report, I did say that we need a recession by the end of 2018 for this to occur. Well, what I didn't calculate was the benefit to the GDP of the tax law changes. And so that is what has bolstered this economy and driven the GDP. So, okay, now you have a different ending. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the problems with that is I don't know. I haven't done the math on all this yet, but I can tell you that the ending 10 years from the beginning of that report wasn't that exciting of an upside, in my opinion.
Okay.
But it becomes more dangerous because I thought we were going to stop at 5.25 or 5.50, and we got to 600.
Quicker than you expected.
Exactly. So, the closer you get to this ending number being close to this ending number, you have a much bigger chance of a downturn in between and then a gradual going back. Mm-hmm. Well, that's like the 90s. Now, the 90s look really benign if you look at a chart and go, oh, it's just the average went down, you know, it took 7 years to go down 12%, big deal. Well, guess what? If you were part of it, it did not feel like that.
And if you were in the wrong inventory.
You were in the wrong inventory. As a matter of fact, I mean, a lot of our people who have experience that go into that era, we were buying properties left and right at auctions where lenders were taking 50% hits. Hmm. So it wasn't as bad as the 2008-10 deal, but it was bad. And if you had the wrong inventory, it was devastating. Mike Cantu at the time had land. It became completely worthless. He had to trade it for airplane or motor home or whatever. And I mean, he figured out how to do it.
I wasn't quite, I remember the Palm Springs home very vividly because I was planting the plants outside and swimming in the 90-degree pools to cool off. And I remember those houses quite vividly. When that was going on, I remember some of the trading items that you traded those properties for inside our garage, the artwork.
Oh, yeah. What a joke that was. That was sort of like, oh, that's got to be special. It's on a pallet?
It's wrapped in plastic and on a pallet.
Yeah. Well, that was sort of like, I think we got a house and a pallet of art. And of course, the art was worthless and the house was not, and it solved something. But we had a 60-foot yacht that we traded.
Yeah.
And we traded that for that art and for a home that we could actually use.
I don't remember ever going on a trip on that yacht.
No, I get seasick. Do you know what? A 2,500-gallon diesel tank, wow. Multiply that times how many dollars it costs to fill it? No, it wasn't ever going to get started as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's December now, so we're...
By the way, I want to just revisit that. We started building those homes and finished those within, let's say, 6 to 8 months, and the whole world changed. I wish somebody had told me about the time factor there. I was on borrowed time and did not know it. I was so confident because things were good that they would stay good. And I remember a very vivid day when I'm speaking to the potential buyer, which were there were very few that ever showed up at the Palm Springs New Homes, but somebody was there. Mm-hmm. Now, I had just 2 years before bought 50 building lots on lease land. And the comment there is they bought the lots where, well, I'm not going to be around at the end of the lease anyway. So they rationalized that to as nothing, it was a no factor in mm-hmm. their decision. I'm sitting there talking to this couple, and Greg is actually there and sort of remembers some of this conversation because he thought I really did a good job. But I said lease land, and they were like, oh. And it was, wow, what a difference.
What a change.
Yeah, and okay, I didn't have that instruction manual. I did not know that when you went from a good market to just barely starting a bad market, I mean, that was 1990. We didn't have this long downturn, a bunch of foreclosures. I just owned the wrong stuff. But think about the negatives that I had. Okay, I had a lease land.
Mm-hmm.
I had the most expensive real estate in a second home area. Those were the negatives. What were the good stuff? I had a brand new custom home. Yeah. It was in a gated area. It got trumped. It got trumped. So that's the thing about these. That what's coming is we're going to have another one of those rounds where everything matters. And it matters on your rentals, and it matters on your flips.
Right.
And you have to start thinking. So you just have to clean up what you've got. You've got to say, okay, well, if I'm going to flip something, I don't want to end up with that property where 80% of the world drives by and goes, there's no way.
I have people calling weekly at this point. What month should I sell? they want like an exact day. And it's interesting watching people who've been around a while. Like you have Rick Solis. He's already out.
Yes. I've been out of California by and large for 2 years. Because why? Because I got to accomplish what I wanted to accomplish.
Right.
That was fine with me. Did I sell too early? Yeah, I didn't sell it because I thought it was the peak price. I sold it because I had an opportunity to double a cash flow.
Right.
And end up with different inventory. So that's when you try to wait to the end. I mean, who can predict an exact? It's funny. Tony Alvarez almost said that in 2005 to me. Mm-hmm. You know, he had like 50 some houses, and he's like, "What month should I sell all these?" I said, "You gotta be kidding me! You're gonna become your own worst enemy. You have 50 of the same house for sale."
Well, I think people don't realize too. Some of it takes time, and you want to be thoughtful. Imagine having to do that many 1031 exchanges at one time, trying to find a home for it. And
that's why one of those topics in the talk is think about this taking a year.
Yeah.
You have a year, but think about it, that it's going to be a methodical process to where you make intelligent decisions and you have time to do that. You don't want to have to try to cram that in the month of whatever. It doesn't work.
Okay. Any new topics for this new report you're really excited about? Any new toys?
You know, the one that I'm literally on my desk is probably 500 pages to read while we're in Florida. And it has to do with topics that I think are coming up that I need to know, because I don't think the damage to real estate is going to come from real estate.
Okay.
I think it's going to come from other directions. And I think I'm trying to get to be very familiar with that. And one of it's corporate debt. So corporate debt, if you look at the chart of corporate debt, it has exploded since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a big problem, especially when you have there's a leverage ratio that has never been higher. So they're at record leverage and they've been able to access very cheap money and they've rolled the dice and probably bought back tons of their stock and the market's done nothing but go up. And all of a sudden it's not doing that.
Right.
It's having gyrations. There's ramifications to that. Now, the one thing that we're just talking about trying to interview somebody that's at the top of the heap of the hedge fund world.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask him very specifically, just like in the residential market where we had the paper that went bad, there were bets against the paper that almost crashed the system that were many times bigger than the loans themselves.
Right.
Are there bets against the corporate debt failing, and who gets that bill? Yeah. I want to know that.
Who's holding the bag on
that's
that?
That's right. That could be really major.
Hmm.
And so I really want to try to understand that.
Okay.
There's also trying to understand the unraveling of quantitative easing. So we've got the Fed having $4 trillion plus of assets that they're releasing gradually into the marketplace. I don't completely understand the ramifications of that, but you know what? There's a blueprint for that. It has been done before, and there have been ramifications that are starting to look like ones that we're getting. Well, that's no joke, you know, and it's kind of repetitive stuff. And so that's literally the book that I just printed for me to read And so that's an important chapter is how this works, how that category affects what we own called real estate.
Yeah.
And the economy, what an impact it has on the next recession and how deep it is, and also how it affects, you know, people getting jobs and laid off and all that stuff.
If you're a realtor in the current market, do you still believe in home ownership and selling real estate?
I do, because I don't want to not call my own shots. So, you know, do I think somebody's going to be devastated like they were? If you asked me that question in 2006 when we wrote the California crash, I would have definitely said, you know, if this is a monetary decision at all, this would be a wise thing to pass on.
Okay.
But I wrote that report and didn't sell Piedmont.
No. Nope.
Piedmont was worth $1 million. It sold later for $5 million. So it cost me $500,000 to own my own home. Would I have done it again? Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't go into that blindly. That was an intentional decision because I don't want to ask somebody if I can have a pet. Because that was what the guy, remember, I talked to a guy that had a really cool house for rent, and he asked me if I had a pet, and I was thinking, that's why I own.
Yeah.
You know? So fortunately, a lot of us own properties where the debt is fixed or it's free and clear, and you don't have that decision, you know?
And you've got a 30-year interest rate that starts with a pretty incredible number.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. We still have a pretty good rate. That's the other part of the title on borrowed time is a play on words on debt. Hmm. Okay. So we're on borrowed time in the sense that the cost of credit, as it goes up, it starts taking down the price that you're capable of reaching.
Right.
Actually, in the short run, that's painful. In the long run, it's more healthy.
Right.
Because if we were going to sit there at 3% and have 3.5% mortgage rates until we peaked out in price,
mm-hmm.
oh my gosh, that would have been trouble. Because now if you have a 5% mortgage rate and you'd already reached your affordability lows,
you have nowhere to go.
That's right. It has only one way to go, come out of the equation of value. Well, we're sort of getting that aggressively now. So there's a big difference between having a 3.5% and a 5.5% mortgage rate.
Yeah.
And if you're getting an FHA loan when you have PMI added, then you're really at 6 already.
Right.
Okay. You start calculating that. Okay. You know, that's why we're on borrowed time in the short run, because as interest rates rise, we'll have an ending quicker than we would have if it was at 4. No doubt about that. It's after that that the other idea of on borrowed time, and that's the debt that we've got. And some of that debt is going to start looking pretty unpayable. I'll give you an example. And I really need to talk to an expert about this, but GE, for instance, has gone down from $35 to $7.
Mm-hmm.
That's an 80% hit. Rick Solis was on Facebook and he said you get paid 6% interest for GE bonds. Okay, well, GE, I'm sure, has a gazillion people that are retired getting retirement checks and have been getting them reliably. What if they went BK? I don't know what that does to people that have been retired. And if they hand the bill to the entity that's responsible for that, they don't have any money either.
No.
So that's where the $40 trillion comes in that initial report. I'm still very comfortable with that. And I'm not actually saying we won't reach a low interest rate at some point. It's just not the point that I thought. And it becomes less likely too, because now what's happening is you're having them build up interest rates that they can take back.
Right.
But you know what's interesting? The 10-year T-bill today is hovering right around 3%. It had gotten to like 3.3,
mm-hmm.
and now it's back down to 3%.
Okay.
Well, if you have the Fed's changing its stance a little bit too. The Fed was saying about a month and a half ago that we're going to be raising rates past neutral, and we're nowhere close to neutral. Okay, the stock market really liked that and went down like 2,000 points in 2 weeks.
Right.
Well, yesterday comes in and said, well, maybe we'll moderate that. Maybe we're close to neutral right. now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they got a 600-point up day. So, you know, that's going to be part of the story. But if they're afraid of a recession, well, then guess what? You can't take 4.5 or 5 percentage points from a 2.5% Fed fund rate.
Right.
So you either have to do a big quantitative easing way quicker than you're not even going to get out of the position you have, or you're going to lower interest rates to negative rates if you have a recession. So guess what? That title, I'm not saying it's wrong. It just may be delayed.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, but I know you're going to be covering this on a newsletter a little bit more.
Yep.
People will be able to ask live questions, and per usual before a timing event, we open it up to anybody who wants to tune in live and ask questions. So that'll be coming up. Find out more information about California real estate on borrowed time at thenorrisgroup.com/TikTok. Hopefully we'll see you January 26th.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.